Hello everybody and welcome back. Thanks for joining me again in my Nursing Aversion and Motherhood podcast. In this episode, the wonderful Abby from The Badass Breastfeeder interviews me about my research, my book, and my campaign work and support work for mothers who are struggling with aversion. And also we share our experiences about having aversion ourselves. So I hope you enjoy this episode and just do reach out if you have any questions or if there's anything else you'd like me to cover.
I'm here with Zeyna Bieta. I forgot to confirm with you that I'm saying your name correctly.
Zeynab, yeah.
Okay. And I also forgot to ask you your preferred pronouns.
She, her.
She is the author of this amazing book, When Breastfeeding Sucks. I love the name of it. And the page admin for, what is the name of your page? Nursing Aversion and Breastfeeding Agitation, is that?
Breastfeeding Aversion Awareness, I think. Breastfeeding.
Oh, I totally had it wrong.
Breastfeeding Aversion and Agitation Awareness,
I think. Okay, well, at least I'm not the only one who doesn't know exactly what it's called. I'll put the link to it so that you guys can follow along, because there's a lot of information about, obviously, nursing aversion, which we'll talk about today. We'll talk about what it is.
Yeah.
Why it happens, or what we, you know, and our experiences and, you know, things that might help. So let me ask you, how did you get involved in, how did you become like one of the leading voices in this topic?
Just because I struggled and there was no literature on it. And I realized you need to have literature published in order for something to exist. Yeah, that was it. I'd say that I struggled pretty severely. It wasn't something that was just part of my breastfeeding journey. It was the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So that's the main reason. And then because, unfortunately, in the breastfeeding world, people were just more like, oh, well, don't talk about that too much because you're going to put people off.
Yes.
And then in the non-breastfeeding world, they were like, oh, well, those symptoms just sound like depression. You know, people must just be postnatally depressed. I think because I found myself in the middle, I was really frustrated and I was just looking for answers, I guess. And then I started to just post people's stories. They submitted stories online. So, and then with the growth of the online platforms, then mothers reiterated what people were going through, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm not completely insane. This is a thing that's happening, and there are loads of women with so many questions. So that's mainly how it was years ago, now looking back at it. Yeah.
And I think that's so much the experiences. You just think that you're crazy or that you're not managing very well, that there's something wrong with you just kind of in general. And because you don't know, I hear from so many people that are just like, oh, wait a minute, maybe that's what was going on with me. You know, because they went through something and maybe they ended up weaning, which totally fine. But a lot of times it's just, that's what we hear is you're struggling and people say, well, then just stop. Then just wean. You know, and a lot of times it's just not what people want to do.
No, in my first research study, one of the overwhelming responses was that mothers didn't want to wean. They wanted to carry on breastfeeding. And so when you think about all of the things they say, and then you think that the main thing they want to do is carry on, you think those things don't go together, but they do. That seems predominantly... women just feel upset that the breastfeeding relationship's being ruined. It's not like, oh, give them a bottle and just stop. It doesn't really answer their questions. It's quite sad, especially if you don't know about it, and then people are telling you, well, your answer is to wean. But like weaning is an easy thing because
Right,
firstly it's
we can
not.
just wean like overnight and everything will be fine.
Yeah, no, it's not, because people use breastfeeding to get their nurslings to sleep and then to help them through pain and to just when they're bored. It's part of like almost like a lifestyle. You can't disassociate what you do and what breastfeeding helps you with, and then decide to stop it. So it's not, yeah, it was good. It was a good few years of a learning curve. Actually, one of the first blogs I read was yours, and then I realized it had a name because you spoke about a version years ago. Like, hey, you can actually, I think it was one of the first I wrote read that was allowing you to kind of not like breastfeeding, kind of hate it, but still do it. It's not like a big deal. You can hate it, it's okay. Whereas normally in the breastfeeding literature and parenting literature, it's all about lovely feelings and calming feelings and all that stuff.
Yeah, breastfeeding is so disposable.
Yeah.
No, it's like if you don't enjoy parenting and you're having a hard time,
Yeah.
people don't say, well, just give your kids away, you know, or if you're having a hard time at your job, they're not like, just quit. You should just quit your job. Just, you know, quit your job, get rid of your husband, you know, just be,
Let it all go.
right. Like what, why are there's solutions for so many things, but when it comes to breastfeeding, it's just like, just stop doing it. It's no big deal. Just such a disposable thing.
In addition to it, that being sort of insulting, because
Yeah.
it actually takes quite a lot of effort to establish your supply. It's
Yeah.
no mean feat. It's really difficult. But in addition to that, it just reeks of not knowing basic biology, because you can't, if you stop producing something so quickly, it's actually it comes with its own risks. I think there's some research now on depression, like post-weaning depression. So if you abruptly stop, it throws you all out of sync. Now, it's not very fair to tell a mother to do that, and then she's going to feel really low, really tearful, really upset, have a loss and a grief of something, and not know what's going on, and all this stuff. And it's preventable, obviously, with informed choices and informed support, things like that. You can make an informed decision, but it's definitely a joke that it's dispensable. It's not on.
Yeah, you're right. We have somebody over here who's I can put I love all the little things you can do. So Zoe is somebody who is a big follower of yours who has gotten a lot of help from your resources.
Oh, hi, that's good to hear. I always worry that they're not that useful because.
Oh my God, they're very useful. I mean, people very much need this. So let's talk about basically if people who are listening, people, so some people have never experienced it, and then some people who are experienced it don't really know that it's a thing, you know, that,
Right.
so let's talk about like what is it?
Well, essentially, aversion, I describe it as breastfeeding having the potential to trigger negative emotions, particular negative emotions like anger, agitation, irritation, rage. It comes with its symptoms like a skin itching, a skin crawling sensation, and often, almost always, coupled with an overwhelming urge to delatch. So if you're experiencing those when you're breastfeeding, it doesn't matter how long your breastfeeding session is, whether it's 2 minutes or 2 hours to get them to bed. If you're having those feelings when you're breastfeeding and they stop when you can delatch and kind of just escape, then that's most likely aversion. There are some other things that it can happen. Like if you're on the autism spectrum, you can have sensory overload, and dyspraxia is difficult with breastfeeding as well. So you can have some symptoms and negative emotions, but and also dysphoric milk ejection reflex. But they're sort of different. And mothers that have both actually, that these extremely inspiring mothers that breastfeed with both, they can actually differentiate between aversion and dysphoric milk ejection reflex and their dyspraxia or their needs on the autism sensitivity with sensory external sensory things. So it's essentially when breastfeeding triggers negative emotions in a particular way.
That was my experience. I was pregnant with my first, no, I was pregnant with my second son when I became pregnant, my first son was like, he had just turned two. And I knew that I wanted a tandem nurse. Like I went in, I knew I wanted to. And so when I became pregnant, I said, okay, you know, yay, you know, it might happen. We get to do this. And I continued to nurse through pregnancy, which is in and of itself difficult, you know, because all of the sensitivities and the hormones and everything. And I'm pretty sure that I used to remember the exact week like that it happened. It was in the 30s, like week 32 or something.
So it was only in the third trimester.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wow. And it happened all in one. I still remember I was sitting in the rocking chair upstairs nursing Jack, and I just was completely overwhelmed all at once with anxiety and anger and rage and this feeling, this creepy crawly feeling all over my body. And yes, the desire to literally just like push his face off of my breast. And in that moment, because I'd heard about nursing aversion very, very, you know, a few times I'd read about it or heard of people talk about it. And I thought, oh my God, I wonder if this is what this is.
Mm.
It was so very specific and so strong. And so, and I remember I used to be a therapist before I had kids. And I remember a kid one time saying, kids just put things in just such beautiful ways. And she was in my office and she was just getting, you know, more and more angry and angry. And she just said, I just feel like I could run through that wall right now. And I always felt, I always stayed in my head. And I remember that feel, I felt like I could just run through a wall. And it was terrible. And it went, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so the running through a wall is really, I've never heard that before, but it makes complete sense if you think of something I cover in my book about one of the reasons aversion might happen is actually when the oxytocin has a sort of upregulation and it actually gives you a stress response because it's actually part of the stress response system, but it's also part of the letdown with the loving, calming effect it can have on you. But the adrenaline that comes with that stress response, that seems to indicate what you just said and what women say at night. They feel a sort of rush of anger, the flight or fright response, and that nocturnal adrenaline makes them want to just run. They don't know where, they don't know how, they just want to leave, they need to get out, they need to push their child to the other side of the room, and they need to leave. So, yeah, I wonder if it's cortisol and adrenaline that goes through when you get that experience of aversion.
That sounds like it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, especially the overwhelming, it's like visceral. It's like it's like kind of like when you vomit, you can't control it.
It's like full body, like a reflex or...
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I just think of all the women that continue to breastfeed through it. So did you carry on like through
I
the third trimester?
On. I tandem fed for 3.5 years and it never went away. And I continued to, you know, so looking back, I wonder, you know, I think how much of my misery through it, you know, did they pick up? You know, I tried to, I was so overwhelmed with the feeling. And then of course, then I had my second son and then there's all of, you know, transitioning to a new family member and all of that chaos. And I mean, it was really important to me to continue because my oldest is, you know, one of these sensory kids who's a very sensitive guy. He breastfed until he was 6.5 years old. And I was surprised that he stopped. And he said to me, he went for, you know, towards the end, you know, the last year or so, it was just, he would kind of latch on to go to sleep. And that was the only time. But he went through, he went like a week or something without nursing. And I said, so at one point while we were going to bed, I said, have you noticed that you really haven't been nursing to sleep at night anymore? And he said, yeah, I can tell that you didn't really like it anymore. I was so overwhelmed with like feeling guilty.
Mm.
Also like very proud of him for like,
just being so empathetic.
Yeah. Like understanding. And also, but then I felt like, well, I kind of left it to him to have to make the decision, which made me feel guilty. And, you know, I think there's no way around feeling guilty about things.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you don't know about it and then you feel like that, there is no way you won't feel guilty, because you're going to think you're a crap mom. You're going to think that there's something wrong with you, and then you're going to blame yourself for feeling like that, when actually it could be hormonal. It could be a whole bunch of other causal mechanistic things that have got nothing to do with you. So guilt, but...
And
yeah,
there's so much guilt in this nursing aversion thing, because you just want to continue, and you want to continue with this journey that you know, likely, like you said, worked so hard to get established, and then there's this thing here now that's ruining it. You know, nobody wants to have like really extreme miserable feelings in front of their child, especially when they're breastfeeding, because it's supposed to be this wonderful thing.
Yeah.
But then you're just kind of like, I mean, it makes you want to pull your hair out.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were times that I will admit I pulled my hair out.
Yeah.
I would literally just grab on and like, you know, I would try to pull on my hair, or you know how you try to just
twist it to
try to change what you're focusing on, you know, or like dig your fingernails into the back of your hand, or like something to just kind of distract you from the miserable feeling.
It's actually really common if you're in a support group. I know any of the nursing aversion support groups will have it, because mothers feel safe to share that. So if you're struggling with this right now, and you do something like pulling your hair out, or what's common, biting down on your wrist, or sort of pinching your thigh so much that it can even cut blood.
Right.
I cover it a bit in my book. It's called the gate control method. So obviously we're doing it out of desperation, but it's actually a method people can use to distract your cognitive aspect, part of your brain, so that it doesn't dwell on those feelings, and so that you can cope with what you're doing. So it kind of tricks the body into focusing on somewhere else, and you have autonomy and control over what you're doing right now, and that kind of brings things into some level of management. But it's not easy in any way. You can have, women are posting pictures of how hard they're pushing down on their breast, and it's, you can see the nail marks and things like that. It's really heartbreaking, actually. And you do it just because it's the thing that you instinctively do to cope.
Right.
You can have your own way of doing that. So if it was your hair, or if it was biting down, it was the biting that was able to get me through.
And I do believe, I mean, if I really thought that it was going to be better for everyone for us to stop breastfeeding, I have to imagine I would have done it. Like, if I really thought that it was going to be better, maybe.
Yeah.
I kept my oldest was, you know, like I said, he's this highly sensitive guy. He had a new little brother. He was bouncing off the walls for 4 months trying to adjust. He was really having a hard time, such a hard time. And it just, you know, the times where they could just both nurse, which actually made it worse when they were both latched at the same
time. Yeah, of course.
But it's so funny, because I didn't have that feeling at all with the baby.
Yeah.
You know, I had the feeling with the older one.
Yeah.
when he would unlatch, everything was fine. But I felt like just them nursing together and them having that, them seeing each other do that was just a way of helping everybody adjust. And,
you know, it is though, isn't it? When you think about every day and you have to do it every day and the times when you're exhausted and the times when they need that connection and the times where you, in a way, you didn't have another option. It's, yeah, again, it's because breastfeeding has, unless you're going through it and you know a lot about it, it has such a disposability about it that people haven't given it its due credit. So if you think about all of the multi-layered uses of it and how dynamic and complex a mother's life is, if she is having to deal with children of different ages and having to manage their emotions and their connections and their sleep and their food and herself and all of this stuff. In fact, you know, we're really complex and quite amazing beings. And when you step into motherhood, you can't discount your own your own rational weighing up of the benefits and the disadvantages. And we do it in an instant. And obviously you repeat that every day and you think to yourself, actually, on weighing up these two, breastfeeding is hard and the aversion is ruining it. But overall, it's going to be beneficial. And that's what the cost is. We always have a burden and a cost. It's like an economic calculus I'm just reiterating that because so often women think, oh my god, especially if their partner doesn't get it and their partner's like, just stop then.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as that. It's just not. And actually there is a cost to stopping.
I have no idea what I would have done if I needed to stop.
Yeah.
How would he have gone to sleep? How would he have gone, how would he have gotten through his day? This kid had breastfed for, by the time, you know, his brother came along, he was almost three. So 3 years of his life, he was breastfeeding all day, all night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we're just going to be like, well, I mean, I don't know what I've done. It would have been, I don't know what I would have done.
I mean, in many ways, it can be emotionally catastrophic for the mom and the nursling, you know, if you're just stopping because of that. And it is part of the process because we know weaning is part of the process. But
yeah.
I don't think people love to give oxytocin its due with all these loving feelings and how it creates such strong bonds in humans and all this stuff. But actually, if you want to take it another step further, you can say, well, it's such a strong bond that it creates in the habitual activity of breastfeeding that you need to give it its due merit if you're just going to stop that habit straight away. And that oxytocin and what it's done is, it's really formidable. I mean, humankind is built on it because of sex, because of breastfeeding, this bonding that we have to another human because of it. It's no joke. And so that's also part of why we don't just stop. It's like, yeah, you don't just stop. Imagine you have to replace that oxytocin. It, you know, it's difficult to move from the boobing to the hugging for lots of people. It doesn't, you don't hug without boob for ages, especially if they're,
And we act like the kids are just going to be totally fine with it.
No. Why would they?
They're so fine. They're like, oh, a hug? Yeah, that's just as good. Like,
no.
Hugging is not anything to them.
Yeah, well, especially not if they're downing something that's really thick and sweet and lovely, and it's somehow the only thing they actually ever knew. Because even in their subconscious, they're gonna be remembering how they drank for survival, even though they won't really know what it is. Mm-hmm. It's something extremely powerful. Like, I don't know, my son was like your son. He was very, very attached to it. It took me by surprise how kind of incessantly attached he was to breastfeeding. I don't think that's spoken about enough. It's almost obsessive. So you have to take into account their different personalities. My daughter was a lot more forgiving. She sort of was okay with, when I used to tell her when she was 6 months or 9 months, I used to tell her, oh my, I can't do this right now. It's hurting mummy. I'm really angry and upset. I can't do this right now. And I don't know if anyone believes me, but I think she did used to look up, and she would unlatch. I wouldn't have to put my finger in the side of her mouth. I kind of feel like she got it. She was more forgiving. Yeah. I had to get help with her actually, because she was under 12 months, and like milk is a main source of nutrition. And you know, you can't be reducing feeds unless you supplement, because actually it's not solids for the first. They can have solids, but nutritionally it's still milk. And yeah, so it's a big learning curve.
So did your nursing aversion, did that set in during pregnancy, or did you have a different experience?
No, I actually didn't know it at the time, but it set in about the same within 2 or 3 days of my postpartum menses coming back with my first.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, because yeah, basically I didn't know, because I didn't realize they could come back so early. But actually that's being a lot more spoken about now, and it seems a lot more common. Even though I never gave him a dummy, I never gave him formula, I fed him on demand, I fed him at night, I did all the things that you're supposed to do to prevent them. But it still came back at about just over 3.5 months, 4 months. It was really early, and then the aversion kicked in almost the same week. And yeah, and it didn't go away.
And so
So
you continued. So did you nurse when you got pregnant again? Were you still nursing, or had you stopped by then?
yeah, no, I was still nursing in the first trimester. But I have a medical, I've got a chronic condition and things like that. And basically I don't know if it was because I was pregnant and breastfeeding, but I sort of got hit by a sledgehammer. Like I couldn't really get out of bed and stuff like that. I thought maybe it was just my body couldn't cope with growing a baby inside and growing a baby outside. So yeah, he was nearly 20 or 22 months, something like that. And I weaned. So I only fed for a little bit when I was pregnant, but I don't think I would have been able to cope.
So then you
Yeah.
continued to, but the nursing aversion just continued, right? Picked right back up when you had your second.
No, I don't think in the first few weeks. I mean, it's just so engorged and so full of milk, and so it's just sort of a blur, really. But my menses returned again early with her, and I think it was generally in the background. But I remember it started to get a lot worse at night first. That's the same pattern that happened with him. But I mean, I still don't have some answers. There's a whole I've written a whole bloody book on it, but I still don't have answers. There's no I don't know if you've read Invisible Women. It's like this book on
Haven't.
the data gap. There's basically a complete data
Oh,
gap
I'm
on
sure.
maternal health. There's no data to make any decisions. So in a way, it's not surprising, like that I don't know why I got aversion. I don't know why my nipples are super sensitive. I don't know why breastfeeding was always uncomfortable for me at best, painful at worst. I don't know why it shouldn't have been, but it's just the way. I don't know why my hormones were the way they were. I don't know. But yeah, I'm not the only one, and in a way, there's some solidarity with that. So. But only retrospectively, in a sense, because you look back at it and you think, oh my God, that's what happened. That's what happened. Other people go through exactly the same thing. This is what can help. But during it, you're just struggling.
I know, looking back at that time is so, it's so painful to look
Yeah.
back, emotionally painful to look back and remember the struggling and the chaos and the darkness and just
Yeah.
all of that is just like, ugh. And then it's like, well, I can't believe I got through that, or I got through it, like
Yeah.
that's what we do, I guess, right? That's all we can do is get through it, because like you said, there's very few answers. There's very few, through your research, have you discovered like things that help? That is there any progress in that area, like things that people can do or things that ease this feeling, or
Well,
biting your hand, I guess. which is totally acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing that anyway to cope, obviously, if you're kind of getting to the point of self-harming, it's better to reach out
Right.
to a doctor or a healthcare practitioner. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's the mother's choice. But I think, I don't know, part of the book goes into why I think it occurs. And I think there's loads of reasons why it occurs. There's biological, societal, and there's psychological. So I think like it's a biopsychosocial phenomena. For some women, it can be predominantly biological, and that can make very clear indications when that happens. So, for example, the return of the postnatal menses crossed with the change and fluctuation of those hormones, which change the area and your nipple and that sensitivity. It would make sense that you can have also the return of post and peri menstrual moods and irritation, and it can cross over. And then another one is massively indicative is ovulation. So a lot of women will just get a spike in testosterone when they ovulate, because that's how it happens. And testosterone is an oxytocin antagonist, which means it will inhibit the loving effects of oxytocin, which means you're going to feel agitated, angry. And it's also the hormone for aggression. It's just well known. Like, in some ways, for that day or two, you can combat it head on if you know. So you can do things that don't inhibit oxytocin as much for you, but you are fighting your biology in a sense. But if you do know what it's called, aversion, if you do know what the causes are, then that empowers you to be able to take steps to redress it. I mean, a lot of women, actually, they have the hormonal aspect, but they've got a strong psychological aspect if they're survivors. So if they're survivors of sexual abuse, they're going to have very strong biological triggers because Yes. of the nature of what the breastfeeding activity is. So recognizing it, and then things like CBT, trauma rewind therapies, women have found them useful. But you know, you have to know that you're not just making it up, you know, in order to take steps to and so often we just suck it up, just like you know, must just be us, let's just get on with it. And no, women deserve to know that it's not just them. Don't blame yourself. There are things, there are direct reasons why it might happen.
Right.
There are lots of things you can try.
I've heard talks around, I mean, I don't know, like around supplements, or I guess all of this would be like stuff like, you know, things that would affect hormones or something, like, you know, supplements there was one supplement that I heard about such a long time ago, and I can't remember what it was anymore, but, you know, herbal supplements or magnesium or these things have.
Yeah, a lot of women try magnesium. It's in the Hubbub. It was by a naturopath called Mel. She just recently did the study. Yeah, so she suggested it. I think it may have helped her. I'm not sure why, but it's in her background. So magnesium seems to anecdotally help. But again, it depends on which cohort you fall into. So if you're a survivor, magnesium is probably not going to help you. If you're, so for example, if you have Raynaud's, or if you, because women that breastfeed through Raynaud's and it's undiagnosed, they can actually have a lot of sensitive and painful nipples, that magnesium won't be the treatment for it. Sorting out the Raynaud's will stop the aversion if you're, but I think the group that are pregnant and breastfeeding or tandem feeding two multiples, they seem to find that magnesium supplements, if they can absorb it, because absorption is a big issue, they seem to really, really help. And that's one, supplements. Another one is just because if you know some of the symptoms and you're able to take it further and advocate for yourself, like, this is happening to me, then you can have the proper tests for it. So a lot of mothers have been having what they think are these symptoms, but actually it checks out to be like hypothyroidism, because it's actually a thyroid, and it was never Because people don't really care about women, basically. It's very clear on an international scale. So you need to be able to sort of advocate for yourself, and then, yeah, it can help. I outline a tool. It's sort of like I try and do it in an easy step-by-step process. I came up with a tool called Bromphalic. So I do a sort of step-by-step. Where's it going? So are you one of these categories? And then these are one of the reasons. And then this is where you go next. And then it's sort of it's a tool to help yourself to identify your triggers, to take remedial steps, to track. So I used to app track my period because obviously it returned so early, and I did wonder. So women, I always say, just first of all, just try and app track your when your aversion kicks in, as well as with your menstrual hormones, to see if there's any connection with that. But I found there are some really good free app tracking apps. But I actually moved on to, do you know about bullet journaling? I found out about bullet journaling. Yeah, so I ended up doing a sort of tracker, and you have the days of the month down there, and you just track. So you track when you got a symptom, or what you ate, or what had happened in the day, or if you were feeling a particular way. And then you can see, it empowers you to see if there's any connections between, because actually sometimes it's just what you're thinking. And if you can stop what you're thinking, then you can stop the manifestation of the aggression, the aggressive feelings, and the feelings of being stuck as a prisoner, stuck as a milk factory, having this story ruminate in your head about, no one gives a toss what I do, no one cares about me, I haven't had a shower, I smell, I'm doing all this stuff, I'm tired, and all that rumination actually, changes your biology and can cause you to be very agitated and anxious. So while it's quite simple, if you were to lay it out, it only you really know your symptoms, and only you really know what can help because of your relationship with your nursling or your situation at home. But I supported loads of mothers who will kind of talk about their aversion, and then it's only like 3 or 4 months down the line that I find out that actually they have their PhD thesis due, or they've got their master's deadline coming up. And I'm just like, don't you think maybe those two are connected? Like the pressure of that deadline, and the fact that breastfeeding actually takes a lot of time and energy, and you've got an external pressure on you. And it was only like when you started your project that the aversion started to come. So it really depends. It really depends on you, your body, your nursing dyad, your situation.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I feel like it's like you're saying, it's so multi-layered. It's so there's so many things that go into it. It's not just like I don't know. I can't think of it. I'm thinking of cancer, but that's probably a bad example. You know, like you have a cancerous lump, and then so we remove the cancer, and so then the cancer is not out of your body. And this is maybe not an accurate comparison, but then you talk about something like nursing aversion. It's like, well, then there's stress, and then there's biology too, and then there's the emotional part, and then the psychological part. And it's not just like something you can do that you can just simply remove that problematic mass, you know. It's
No, and even if you could, in a way, it something that's fundamental to why it's so sort of emotionally exhausting and guilt-ridden
yeah.
is because it's not just you. Like you as a mother, you're in this sort of unique situation where you can't make the decision just based on what you need.
Yeah.
You're directly responsible for somebody else who's like seriously like latched to you,
Yeah.
like literally latched to
Yeah.
you. And if
Literally
people
dependent
don't,
on you for life.
you have to consider that as well. Mothers are in this position where they will often sort of put their nursling first because that's what we do. And the younger they are, the totally makes sense. But if you're doing it for their survival, and because that's what you're instinctively going to be doing, there's a process at which that changes. And for some women, navigating that process is harder than others. Like, I wish somebody had sort of told me, maybe try patting him on the bum or shushing him to go back to sleep at night if you're struggling with breastfeeding. But really, all I got was like, no, just breastfeed to sleep and breastfeed for this and breastfeed for that and breastfeed for everything and just take your boob out and things like that. And it totally worked, but I don't think I navigated through trying to mother in different ways. And I probably needed to because it was a bit uncomfortable for me. Like, it's the perfect way of doing it if it works for you. But I think I was just not skilled enough to figure out other ways or give myself permission to find other ways of doing things and move away from that sort of heightened sense of, when they're a newborn and like you're sort of only ever half asleep, because when they make a murmur, you're like, quick boo, because yeah. So I think that just stayed for a longer time with me because I was in that.
I know, and I feel the same way, and I don't know if that's just you or if that's you know it, that because I did the same thing when so my first one was, like I said, very sensitive, and what it comes with a lot of highly sensitive people is that they just don't sleep very well. And so he did not sleep very well. And when this new baby, actually, this random new baby, he came along,
He doesn't have a name.
he was like 6 months old when my first was still having trouble going to sleep. And I thought, oh my God, I cannot. I actually called it. I got in touch with a sleep consultant, which I had always avoided doing because I felt like they were going to be like, well, you need to cry it out, you need to do things, which I was just like, I'm not open to that. So I was afraid of what they were going to tell me. So I waited so long to reach out to somebody, and I got a hold of this wonderful woman, Rebecca Meeke. She's a wonderful sleep consultant who, just works with, honestly, just works with whatever your personal situation is. And so I told her what the situation was, and okay. And so, as she, it was the same thing. I was, well, now I'm talking about actually. So she helped very much with Jack, and that was wonderful. And then, what I was saying with you were saying about trying these other things. So if you're struggling, kind of creative, and I talk a lot about that too, creating like boundaries, breastfeeding boundaries, which are so hard to do when you have a newborn. But as they get older, it's actually a really, really wonderful thing to kind of try to do, to try to practice, because and I feel like that's something like for women that we just don't do. Like we don't understand boundaries because we've never been taught boundaries. People have always violated our boundaries. And we don't know what it is to create these boundaries around our bodies and around our emotions and all of this. And she said, why don't you, if when Exley starts to stir at night, pat him on the butt, rub his back. And I was like, what? She said,
Revelation, like
well,
ding.
she goes, he might not be all the way awake. He might just fall back asleep. But when you she said, when you're turning him over and you're pulling him to your breast, he's waking all the way up. Try to just let him go back to sleep and see. And if he doesn't, of course, nurse him. But maybe he'll just go back to sleep. Maybe try it. She said, you're actually waking him all the way up to like get over to your boob if they're not already there, because obviously sometimes they're already there. But the older they get, sometimes they roll around or they do, they're upside down and they're all these things. Yeah, I feel like so much of this just crosses over into that, like we don't do this stuff for ourselves. Like we don't.
No, also we don't see it. Like if I think if I was lucky. I was in a place with my mum. We moved back because I have like disability support. I needed to have somebody else there. So we moved back with my mum, and we were in this place in London that actually had a really good knowledge of breastfeeding peer support networks, and it's really well known for having good access to services. So I was lucky. I managed to go to like support sessions, and we thought maybe he might have a tongue tie and all this kind of stuff. So in a sense, I was lucky, but I wasn't confident enough to go out and have a group of people I was breastfeeding and like the mothering with. And you just, I just feel like if I did, then I might have been able to see somebody setting those sort of boundaries that you were talking about in a kind of normal way, instead of me, like as a crazy witch. I'd be like, oh my God, you're still touching me, like get off me. And my kid, who's like non-verbal because they're so tiny, looking up at me like, why are you a crazy woman? Like, if you didn't want me to touch you like that, why didn't you just ask me nicely? And it's then they're right. Like, my son would have been right to have thought, like, you're mental. But it's because I let it get so bad, right? And I didn't have anyone else to talk to. And I was also trying to, I was trying to hide it from my husband and my family because they're really traditionally Iranian, and it's sort of just the thing that you breastfeed. And it's not like it's not even ever spoken about. You're just breastfeeding. It's like, I never gave it a second thought. And I was just trying to hide it. So I was trying to hide all the internal feelings. And that's just not human. It's just not normal. You have to be upset and annoyed if someone's scratching and pinching you for like 40 minutes, 15 times a day. I'll do it to anyone in my family, and I'll give you £1 million if you're not going to get annoyed with it. But you don't think like that because, like you said, we don't have the words, we don't have the role models, we don't have the habitualization of speaking up for ourselves and managing it in this sort of like smooth, elegant way where we can just put our boundaries up and have this conversation and manage the screaming, crying outrage of somebody who's had their boob torn away from them and stuff like that. Oh, if only.
I know that's one of the things I say the most to people. If you're breastfeeding a toddler or you're pregnant, start practicing those boundaries now, because it's going to be so useful to. And I think that's what you work so hard to get. This isn't really necessarily about nursing aversion, but for all of it. Like we've said a bunch of times, you work so hard to get established with breastfeeding and you want it to continue. Maybe you want to breastfeed a toddler, but like you're so touched out and they act so weird. Like toddlers are just so different to breastfeed than babies, and you're just like, I can't handle this. People don't, I remember, because I didn't invent the idea of boundaries. Like I remember saying, like, I was losing my mind, and a friend of mine said to me, like, something about boundaries, and I was just like, my mind was blown. I was like, oh wow,
I'm allowed to do that.
that's totally something I can do. Yeah, like I'd never thought about it. I had never even considered that I could do something, that I was a part of this too, that I could, that my feelings mattered, that I could actually do something that would take control of the, or I could feel like I had some control of my body back, or not constantly feel touched down all the time. And my
Yeah, it's
mind was
not.
blown. And I thought, and I think that we made it so long and they ended up weaning of their own accord, because of that, because I was able to be like, wait a minute, like, sure, you can keep breastfeeding under these conditions. We need to,
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. I don't think I set any. I mean, looking back, I don't think I set any boundaries. I just wasn't really informed in any way. I just sort of, I think even when he was older and he was a fully fledged toddler, I probably read a blog or two, maybe the La Leche League, about setting boundaries. But at that point, you've got nearly 2 years of immediate responsive boobing. You're gonna be met with some resistance if you're trying to change that. And unfortunately,
Absolutely.
I'd fallen pregnant, so it wasn't the right time for me to spend all that energy on implementing the boundaries. It was a big learning curve, and it definitely is something that, women should have some access to, just to know that they can safely set boundaries and have that conversation. Even when they're non-verbal, I would say talk about it because they know stuff. I tell you, they know
Let's get
stuff.
used to talking to them about stuff. Yeah. And they'll be like, oh, maybe they don't really understand exactly what you're saying right now, but get them used to kind
No, I get you. Get them on your wavelength. So
of.
tell them everything. Use the complex words. Explain to them what's going on and how
Yeah.
they're they love you at the end of the day. I think I forgot that as well, that he didn't have anyone else, my firstborn. He just had me and he loved me, and I think I just overlooked that a lot because I was swept up in my own angst and did, like, wailing in my own sorrow for having such awful aversion.
Well, you've done so much research and you've done so much work in this area. I mean, I talk about things like what is nursing aversion? Like, what does it feel like? What are some things you can do? But like, is there anything around this conversation that we like that I'm missing or that you've talked about that you think are other aspects that are kind of less talked about or anything like that?
Yeah, I think I've noticed something I didn't cover too much in the book, and I don't think I cover it enough online, and that's when breastfeeding sort of stimulates sexual arousal. And I've had a lot of private messages about it, and I just want to say that I've had a lot of private messages about it, and I'm talking about the hundreds. I haven't counted, maybe they're going into the thousands. So you're not alone. And I want to say, like, be really liberal about it and just say, well, women can orgasm when they give birth. So if you're comfortable having those mini orgasms, maybe just do it. I don't know what to say. I think it seems pretty normal to have those two areas alight when you're breastfeeding. But what I've noticed is that the women that really struggle with it, it's the suppression of it seems to bring out the aversion. So that's not spoken about enough. Another thing is, yeah, you having the words to explain what it is and when it happens to you, having your own personal data, so understanding what the phenomena is and how it's differentiated between other medical conditions, and also how and why specifically it happens in you, can be the key for you taking steps or not taking steps. It depends when you're ready to make changes. And also that sometimes aversion goes away completely. Like, it does go away completely. Like, especially if you just want to hydrate at night and you're not doing that. Literally, if you take a couple of these glasses and down them at night, some mothers find their aversion completely disappears. And so your body is telling you something. And if it's not that, and you try everything else, and you really try to do your best, then weaning is a good option for you to consider if you want to. And I don't know about a lot of breastfeeding groups I admin, they're there for breastfeeding support, and I understand their group ethos. But I believe breastfeeding support, weaning support is breastfeeding support. So, me personally, weaning took over a year, and that's a year of breastfeeding support that I needed. And weaning is a process, and you don't have to commit to it, but you can be open to it. It might give you the freedom to not feel as crap, like, with aversion as you do. You can just be entertaining the idea without committing to it, because I think I don't know what it is sometimes. Maybe it's because it's the traumatic medicalized birth that we that many 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 mothers have, that may end up in a C-section or interventions where you're sort of told that your body's basically failed you, which is just bull. It's not true. But because of that, a lot of women, they really want to be good at breastfeeding because they want their bodies to work, and so you can cling on to it, and that's fine, cling on to it, but recognizing why can help you be free of the pain, like the emotional pain of what's going on. But there's so much that can be said on it. But I think,
No, it's an endless conversation, really.
yeah.
Which people can have more. So can you show us the book again? Because we showed it at the beginning, but that was almost an hour ago.
Oh, so it's
The book
very
is
pink. I mean, the
on
publishers.
Breastfeeding Socks. Pink is my favorite color. It's the best. It's pink.
Yay.
It's got boobs on it. It's got a cool title, and it's about nursing aversion. So where do can people find this book?
Well, it's available at Pinter & Martin, which is the publisher, but I think if you're international, the publisher said the best place to get it is the Book Depository, because they give free worldwide delivery.
Oh,
And also, I mean, obviously it's in Amazon in the States, but I think people are just not getting it as quick as they, when they order, they're not getting as quick as they like. So maybe the book depository, but also if you can't afford the book or if you're too tired, then because it's a read, like there's a lot of references in there. I do cover it in a podcast, which is super short. So literally it's just 10-minute podcast on what it is and what the studies are about it and what you can try. So you could just listen to them in under an hour if you just desperately need help that night.
Okay, I'm going to put all this here. So when breastfeeding sucks, at the book depository is probably the best one right now for, and probably most people watching are in the States. And I'm sorry, I just want to write it down so that book deep. And then the pop. Oh, okay, that went up as a comment. Okay, and then so what is your podcast called?
I think it's just called Breastfeeding Aversion,
I love
or
how you say, I think.
oh, I'm really crap with these things.
Is that found everywhere podcasts are found?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, as in you could get it on all platforms, I think. And then we have some groups, so we've got a
Yeah,
French
there's a
group, a
group here
Spanish group,
also.
and a Hungarian group. So if you wanted a French but and a Russian group. I don't know, they're very small, but if you want to talk about it in your own language, we have a few groups. But the main thing is I would recommend anyone to join an aversion group. There's loads now
What's
on
the name of
Facebook.
your aversion group? I know we were trying to think of this before. It was, let me see. I have your page here. Wait, I had your page.
It's called Aversion Sucks because I was being quite
Aversion
moody that
sucks.
day. Yeah, it's
What's
called
the name of the
Aversion
group?
Sucks.
That's the name of the right?
Yeah, we have a mentoring system on there, so you can pair up with someone if you want to have more sort of support. Oh, there's a free structured support course online as well. So if you want like videos and tips and leaflets, booklets that get sent directly to your phone, I have a structured support course online you can sign up to.
And where do people find that?
That's just on the resource website, the breastfeedingaversion.com.
And that's your website is breastfeedingaversion.com.
Yeah, so there should just be a button somewhere, and it gives you a lot of actually what I discussed with you today, but a bit more in depth. It's just a 4-week course.
That's awesome. Breastfeedingawareness.com.
Oh, breastfeedingaversion.com.
Aversion. Thank you. So many words. Too many
Yeah,
words for me.
the whole thing is too much. I just find this is all overload. Like, I just want everything in one place
I
with one
know.
device, with one, yeah.
Yes, right. That would be a lot easier. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this time and with us and your time. I know your time is very valuable, and I'm sure.
No, same. I'm really appreciative. Really appreciative. It's so nice to just talk with someone who got it, who experienced it. So
Yeah.
I'm not trying to justify or
Right,
explain,
I
basically.
know. Trying to defend yourself,
Yeah,
trying to
exactly.
get people to believe that you actually went through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not fun. Well, yeah, I'm glad we're connected now. We should do it again. And I encourage everybody to get the book. Although, I mean, like you said, if people are tired, but still, you don't have to read it from cover to cover. You can
No.
look at the
You can dip
different
in.
sections and maybe
Actually,
pick.
there's one thing that's really good that I don't know what page it is, but it shows, there's like a little diagram that shows why when you're more touched out and annoyed, they're going to breastfeed more. So that's really helpful for mums because they feel like really annoyed when they're touched out. But why is my nursling clinging to me more? It just explains what happens with your social nervous system and with your body and stuff like that, and why they ask again to nurse and then why the cycle keeps going. So
Interesting.
it does, it gives you peace of mind that you're not going crazy. Like,
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
that it's a thing and why things happen in your little microcosm of drama when you
yeah.
have aversion.
Yeah. That's great. Okay, well, thank you again so much, and thank you
You
everybody
too.
for watching, and I hope
Yeah,
that
thank
you learned
you.
something. Yeah, and we'll yeah, I put all the little information about the names of the groups and the podcast and the all the things that we were just talking about are
Oh,
in
thank
the comments.
you.
So everybody can find those. I can't like get it to tag, but so like if you know, for the group, you have to just type in and search the group and then.
Oh, it's okay. I'm sure that if you just write a version in the
In the
bar,
search
there'll
bar,
be loads of groups you can. I really recommend joining one. Yeah.
I know. I wish that was something. I don't even think that that was a thing when I was, or something
No, it wouldn't
to
have
look
been.
into.
How old is he now?
He's
He's.
6 and a, oh, he's going to be 7 in a couple months.
Yeah.
There could have been. I didn't even think to look.
Yeah, Facebook wasn't really kicking off as much as it is now.
That's true. Yeah. And now
I mean,
there's,
I don't even think I was on Facebook. You're lucky in a way. Yeah, people are lucky in a way.
If they can deal with all the drama, then you get some stuff out of it.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you so much. And you
You
can
too.
follow Zainab Yeto and all these places. And it's so great to connect with you. And we'll be in touch.
Yeah, definitely.
Take
Bye
care.
for now, everyone. Night night
Bye.
from London. Bye bye.